Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Rick Snyder is presenting on Wisdom of the Body, Leading by Intuition. And he's the author of the book, Decisive Intuition, and co-founder of Straight Talk Live. And with that, I will turn the presentation over to Rick. Welcome.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for joining me at this hour, wherever you may be in the world. Very excited to talk to you about one of my very favorite topics in intuition. And in intuition in a different kind of way than I think we usually discuss it. For me, I'm also the CEO of Invisible Edge, and we actually train intuitive intelligence with leaders and teams in corporations, small businesses. So a lot of my passion is how do we bring this really incredible resource that we all have and actually in practical ways, use that in our decision-making, use that in our everyday ability to read out the room and to anticipate what wants to happen next and to have that honest conversation with ourselves of what we're thinking and feeling on a much deeper level. So that's what I want to get out of this next hour with you all is hopefully inspire you and maybe even give you some new senses of how to connect with that deeper voice. I'm sure there's a whole range of experiences with everyone on this call right now of who actually has had a lot of experience tapping into their intuition. For others, it might be a new topic. And so all of you are welcome. And hopefully you'll get to deepen a little bit more into how your own system works, your own guidance system. So what is intuition? We can talk a lot about that, but first we need to start with what's the definition? If you look out there, typically you'll find that how intuition is defined is knowing something inherently without the need for any conscious reasoning. So I don't need to think about it. I just know it's true. I can feel that's the direction I need to go. So I like that definition. I play with one a little bit differently in my book because I want to use one that's a little more approachable and practical that we can use every day. And so how I define intuition is it's an embodied knowing that comes from listening to what wants to happen next. So I'm going to break that down. It's an embodied knowing. So it's not just coming from my head. I'm actually tuning into my whole bodily wisdom. It could be my gut. It could be my solar plexus. It could be something in my throat. There could be sensations throughout my whole being, for example. So that's the first bit is it's an embodied knowing that comes from listening to what wants to happen next, which means I'm actually engaging with life. I'm actually asking those questions. I'm actually creating space to listen and to have that kind of engagement with my surroundings, my environment. Or if I already think I know what's happening next, there's no room for that dialogue with life. And so it's being willing to ask and feel into, oh, what wants to happen next? What if, how do I bring my curiosity to the conversation? Whether it's a team meeting or in a boardroom or even with your spouse or your children, deciding maybe you have a big decision of moving or going to a different school or a career choice. These are the moments where our intelligence is speaking to us. And so how do we learn how to listen to our intuitive language? So How I think of it is basically our subconscious mind, how it works. We're all basically antennas broadcasting electrical signals to each other. That's how we can feel the vibes of those around us. So anyone that's been in the business world, when you walk into a team meeting and you can tell the energy of the room right away, right? And so the more that you start to open up to being willing to sense and feel what's happening around you, that's going to help you as a professional. It's going to help you be able to read out the room and be able to address the issues or lead in a certain direction or pivot as you need to and adapt. And so this is why we're seeing today's leaders really hungry for things like emotional intelligence and intuitive intelligence, because they're realizing, oh, wow, yeah, that actually has served me. I haven't always given it credit, but it served me, not just the data on the spreadsheet, but how I feel as I go throughout the day. When I talk to an employee and there was something that happened in the interaction and it just felt a little bit off. And I just like, oh, what is that? And I might not know what it is, but I know something was there. And so do I have the courage to follow up and have those conversations and give feedback and get into curiosity and dialogue? So there's so many great ways intuition can be used on a very practical level, whether you do sales and you're trying to anticipate your prospect and what's happening in that conversation, whether you're a leader or a manager, whether you're a team player and you're trying to work collaboratively with others, being able to read out intuitively what needs to happen, even when it's not convenient or it's not comfortable, that's really one of the biggest distinctions with intuition, right? Because intuition isn't always comfortable. Like when we're listening to that deeper calling, we're going to be challenged from our egoic comforts, right? And so that's how I often know that I'm on track, is when I get that signal to go in a certain direction. And sometimes there's a little bit of fear that comes with that, or, whoa, okay, that's a stretch. That's a new territory for me. And yet the other side is that's alive. That's what aliveness is I'm leaving my comfort zone and what I know. And intuition is really that conversation that opens me up to the whole ecosystem around me. That's much bigger than just me, me, me. So one of the things, it's important to make a distinction. I think often why people doubt their intuition is because they confuse intuition with emotional reactivity. So this is a really important point here. Sometimes I might have a strong emotional reaction about something. Or I might be pretty turbulent about whatever might be happening in my life. And then I feel like, oh, no, that's my intuition. I can't go down that path. I can't make that choice. And so how do we know when it's emotional reactivity or when it's fear? Or even sometimes overexcitement. Like anyone who's ever been in love or had that honeymoon stage, chances are you felt that overexcitement about someone and maybe you missed the 10 red flags that were there the whole time, right? So there's ways we can be taken out of our deeper intelligence sometimes because of our emotional excitement or even fear and blocking something from happening. And so that's a very important distinction. And they've actually shown in neuroscience, when we have emotionally reactive moments, it lights up different parts of our brain than when we actually have intuitive moments. So they're actually seeing this now in neuroscience with functional MRIs when they can show which areas of our brain get lit up in certain moments. So it's really amazing how neuroscience is coming along and showing how this language of intuition is actually different than just our normal rational thinking. It's actually a different frequency. It's related to emotions because sometimes we use emotions to feel what's going on, but it's also different than emotional reactivity. That's the main point. So the last thing I want to say about this is, well, how do you, if you're having an emotionally reactive moment and you know you don't want to make a choice from that place, ideally, what do you do? So this is where taking a deep breath and coming back to your body. And if you're noticing you're a bit frenetic or revved up somehow with your emotions, how do you slow down and come back to center? And then once you've stabilized emotionally, then it's a good time to check in with your intuition. Then it's a great time to ask the question that you're sitting with versus asking that from a place of scarcity or anxiety or a lot of times or overwhelm, which is often where we can make our, you know, worst choices from. Our worst decisions are often made from those places. So what happens when we first stabilize and then we check in with our intuition. And that's one way to make that distinction. The other, sometimes I call this bullshit intuition, is sometimes we want to project meaning onto things. So if I see like 14 doves go by, or that's actually probably a lot. Let's say I see 2 doves go by and I'm on a date and I just assume, wow, this is my partner. This is my life partner. That's the sign I'm looking for. My intuition tells me, right? So I think sometimes we just have to be careful because we might read too much into a situation and call that our intuition. And so what this is really about, and yes, there is synchronicity, of course, those things do happen. There are signs outside of us. What I would just say is, how can we still stay connected to our inner sense and keep asking the question, keep staying in relationship? And notice if we have a strong pull to want to, you know, move forward to something, or a block towards something as well. And how do we really try to stay open and really ask the question, okay, is this choice the right choice for me? If I move away to college over here, or if I take this career path, is this the right choice? So what I want to do is I just want to cover one thing called the intuitive languages, and then I want to open it up to Q&A, and I want to hear from you. And I prefer a much more engaging style here. So one of the things that we found in our research, we interviewed a lot of business leaders of how they use intuition in making decisions, from everywhere from South Africa to the Silicon Valley, from small startups to big corporations. And one of the trends we saw is there's a few different intuitive languages that of how we get our messaging. So here's what I want to ask you is I want you to think about, how does your intuition speak to you? And so here's some of the main languages that we see. Number one, I like to call it body intuitive. So people who literally get a feeling, they get a sensation, and they've been able to recognize that over time. And sometimes you can think about in hindsight, when you've had a gut feeling and you didn't listen to it, how did that show up for you? Did that literally show up as a gut feeling? Did it show up as you saw, you know, colors and words? Did you hear something and you maybe didn't follow through or listen to it? So when you had a big moment and you didn't trust your intuition, how do you know that? How did that information come to you? So once again, it could be a body. You might be a body intuitive. You might be more of a visual intuitive. So literally you see images, you see words, you might see a depiction of a scene that could be prophetic or could be happening. So a lot of people are visual intuitives. Others are audio intuitives. So they literally hear messages audially through sound. They might hear someone's name, or they might hear like, oh, pay attention to this, or some brief phrase. So those are the three most common. Sometimes people also get intuitive messaging that happens through their dream states. So some of you might very well know that out there, that through dreams, you might get some very prophetic messages or helpful messaging that just helps you connect the dots. And that's really what's happening, is your subconscious mind actually has a chance to connect all the dots, because your conscious mind is actually asleep. It's relaxed. It's turned off for a moment. And so the unconscious can work, do all the work in the background, which actually the subconscious mind processes information 500,000 times faster than the conscious mind. So what does that mean? That means right now, as you're listening to me on this call, your conscious mind can pick up about 40 bits per second of information, which is pretty good, right? The subconscious mind is picking up 20 million bits per second of information. That's like a single dirt track versus a 20-lane highway of information. And so the more we can get out of our head and tap into our deeper subconscious, whether it's through our dream states, whether it is through exercise or meditation or mindfulness or breathing. Some people will go on, I know some business leaders I work with, they'll go on a long drive in the countryside, because somehow their mind will just be able to shut off for a moment, and they'll actually get amazing, innovative thoughts that they never had before. I know for me, sometimes being in a steam room or a sauna can be really amazing, because your system just relaxes, right? And then you'll actually have more of an opportunity to tap into your subconscious. So pick what works for you, find out the thing that works for you. But the key is really, how do you get out of your head and get into your body? And get into slowing down and breathing. Last thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to open up to you, is Steve Jobs was very famous for when he got fried from looking at the computer screen for too long. And I know we probably all experienced that on some level. He would actually step away from the computer when he was stuck in his thinking, and he would walk around the Apple campus in Cupertino, California, barefoot, just walking around the campus. And what that did is it gave Steve an opportunity to slow down, because when you're walking barefoot, especially, you have to go slow. And that just changed his state of mind. It changed his rhythm. And what actually happened is he was able to get these intuitive breakthrough ideas because he wasn't in his normal way of thinking, in his fast, okay, let's do this. We got to be productive, da, 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 da. And he actually relaxed that whole rational thinking and was able to slow down and let his intuition find him. And that's one of the last things I'm going to say right now is it's not about you finding your intuition. It's about allowing space for your intuition to find you. And that's what Steve was wonderful with. You know, he had a Zen meditation background. A lot of people know that. So he was a practitioner and he knew to change his states in order to be able to take advantage of all the opportunity around creativity and innovation that's there. So I would love to, I'm going to put a pause on myself now and I want to do some listening. I'd love to hear from anyone who wants to share. So raise your hand if you want to share. And Jeremy is going to help us get to you. But I would love to hear from you. What is your intuitive language? Or if you have any questions about that, we'd love to hear just what do you know about yourself? So let's start there.
Thank you so much, Rick. What a great way to reframe. And as allowing your intuition to find you, just really a valuable insight. As people are asking questions, I'm curious, how do you make the distinction between intuition and say people who use tools like muscle testing or pendulums or things like that to help making decisions?
Yeah, I think a lot of those kind of biofeedback types of things are very valuable because I still think it's your system in communication with potentially a machine or something that can read your energy. So I think those things can be very helpful. And I know people that sometimes use a pendulum. I know some people that use like what they call more of an internal pendulum, where they don't need to do that outside anymore. They're just really tuning into their own ecosystem because they've learned to listen to that so deeply. So I really think whatever tool works for you, go for it. You know, feel free to just play with those, experiment. And here's one thing I like to say about that. Just like when you're learning a new instrument, you don't get up on stage right away and play. When you're just learning, you practice. You go to your room and you practice. And maybe you eventually invite your sibling to, you force your sibling to listen to you. And then maybe some other folks. And eventually you learn and you get courage and you get out there, right? Same with intuition. Start practicing with small decisions in your everyday life. You know, practice like, oh, should I go out for lunch or just stay home today? Do I want to see my friend Ronald or not? And just play with these smaller decisions and then whether you're using a pendulum or a biofeedback machine or you're just tuning in and listening and breathing and seeing what comes to you, that's a great way to start building your relationship with your intuition.
Great, thank you. So we have a question from Tom and he says he's curious if you make a distinction between instinct and intuition.
Thank you, Tom, I do, yes. For me, instinct is really about survival. I do think they're related, but I think they're also different. They overlap. So for me, instinct is really survival based. It's about, okay, the house is burning. We got to get the kids and get out now. And that's just instinct. It's, you know, biological instinct of survival. It's our hardwired need to survive, right? And we all have that reptilian brain. And I think it's most closely related to the gut as well. You know, they say the gut is primordial. It's the first brain that develops out of the three brains. We have the gut brain, the heart brain, and the head brain, where we literally have neural networks in all of those three centers. And so, but the gut is the first one that forms. It's our first biological moving towards something that feels like food or comfortable and moving away from danger. You know, even in amoebas, that's the first ingredient of being an amoeba. And so we're the same. We still have that function. And so instinct is incredibly valuable. It's what gets us to survive in a most basic way. But intuition is so much more than that. Intuition is not just about survival. Intuition starts to activate our higher centers as well, not just the gut, but also the heart, where we feel connection and empathy and love. And we literally feel connection with people around us. And then, of course, our executive center and even our third eye and other areas where we can connect with more energies and other frequencies, almost like a radio, basically, a radio antenna. And so that's what's amazing is, for me, instinct is vital. I'm glad I have that mechanism for sure, or we all probably wouldn't be around here for very long. We'd get smashed left and right. But the other part is, okay, it's not just about survival. What's my deeper calling? Why is it that sometimes I feel like I'm really on path in my life and other times I feel lost? And what if there has to be some kind of connection on a deeper level that would even tell me that in the first place? Or I wouldn't know I'd feel lost. I wouldn't know that I'm actually on track, right? And I know most of us can relate to that, where sometimes we feel like everything is lining up and we're exactly where we're supposed to be, right? And so for me, that's our intuition helping guide us to our deepest growth and learning, which is, once again, not always comfortable. I've had moments where my intuition led me to really horrific experiences, but I needed to experience them. That was the fastest way for my growth to happen. So it's not always this pleasure cruise.
Please bear with us while we manage this technical freeze here. There we go. We lost you a little bit, Rick. We're back.
Sorry about the technical freeze. We're technically thawing out now, so thanks for staying with us.
Always an opportunity to center. Take a breath.
So I'd love to open it up to other folks. Love to hear questions and or how does your intuition speak to you? What have you learned and seen or questions about that?
We have a few other questions in the Q&A.
Sure.
As we're waiting, if people want to speak, again, Jeremy has invited you to raise your hand and we'll open the microphones. In the interim, Natasha is asking, can you talk more about how to distinguish gut reaction from trauma-based hypervigilance? And she explains she's very good at using intuition when she works with clients, but she gets fearful and confused when it comes to making decisions about her own life.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, really good question. I think that's true. A lot of times when it's our own stuff, it's just harder to navigate than when we're helping somebody else. So I really appreciate that question. So I think the key is how can you continue to self-regulate? So whenever you are feeling a bit revved up from maybe a flare-up of a trauma, or it could be just a quick response to something like a reaction response. First step is just to notice that, like, okay, wow, I'm feeling a bit revved up. I'm feeling like my system is in hypervigilant mode. That's starting to happen. So can I first be aware of it and name it? And that helps me pop out of it a little bit. That means I'm not totally fused to that experience, right? So how can I first name it? Secondly, once I've named it, how do I get curious about that? And do I need to breathe? Do I need to regulate myself? The breath is the fastest way to regulate yourself. That's why I keep coming back to that. So if I do a few deep cycles of breathing, that might help my system, my nervous system, actually relax and activate my vagus nerve, which is actually where intuition is also, it's the highway where intuition travels in our nervous system. And so that will help me access my creativity. When I slow down, it's that parasympathetic response. And so that's the key thing, is when I notice that activation's happening, okay, name it.
And it looks like we have another opportunity to take that breath that Rick's telling us about as we wait for the video to come back online. Had a little bit of a freeze there and an opportunity to practice breathing that you suggested, Rick.
Perfect. So that's what I would say, is come back to the breath, slow down, stabilize. And then from there, you can try to access that intuitive space again and ask whatever question is alive for you.
Great.
Thank you.
So we do have Tom has his hand raised, and Jeremy's going to unmute him for a minute so he can ask a question live.
Hi, Tom.
Maybe.
Tom, if you want to speak or even type in your question.
While we're waiting for that, we also have the opportunity to upvote questions. So this one has an upvote. So from Val Rosa, how do you communicate to others in a credible way, your intuitive ways, gifts when you practice in a scientific medical environment? How do we
Great
win
question.
Over the skeptics? Yeah.
Such a good question. I've been in that room. So we've literally worked with like R&D lab leaders of some of the largest corporations on the planet. And these are tried and true scientists. Think about this. This is exactly what I tell them. Look at the scientific method. You know, what's literally one of the first steps of the scientific method? It's being willing to slow down and like, oh, I have a hunch. They call it a hypothesis. But like, I have a hunch. What if we tried electricity this way? What if we did this? What if we added EV batteries and vehicles and tried that, even though no one's doing that, right? Huh, would that work? And so intuition is part of the scientific method. It's our ability to think about and have a pause moment and think of and being open to a more creative way to do something or a more innovative way that maybe has never been done before. And so this is one of the most amazing gifts, is it's literally baked in the scientific method. And when I tell that to scientists, people who really do science, they get it right away. They're like, yeah, totally. We do that. We don't always publish that or talk about it, but yeah, that's our little secret. Because they know if you're going to think differently, you have to interrupt your normal routine, your normal way of doing things and your normal habits. And so it's literally baked in there. The other thing that wins over scientists or even engineers, I work a lot with engineers also, who are often left brain identified, very logical minded, you know, and they're, you know, they'll actually identify that way. But what I find is everyone can relate to a time in their life when they had a strong feeling about something and they didn't listen to it. Almost everybody raises their hand in the classroom when I say that, and they can repeat that time that happened, right? So my whole point is, what if we started listening to our intuition the first time, not the sixth time? What would actually be different in our lives if we really trusted ourselves on that level? The last thing I want to say about the science piece is that neuroscience is saving the day in some ways, because the last 20 years or so, there's been tremendous amounts of research of how people are using intuition and accessing it for making better decisions. And in fact, the military, and I actually, on my podcast, I had a former Navy SEAL commander who actually teaches intuition to his elite warriors. So they're actually using this in the military now also, because they know in times of chaos, in times of volatility, you have to be able to trust your intuition and be able to pivot in a moment's notice, especially if you're in a foreign, you know, intense situation that you've never experienced before and you don't have all the data, right? And we never really have all the data. And so we still have to learn how to trust ourselves and make those decisions in the moment. And so they actually teach this in the military in certain areas for people who are in the field, and how to sync up with their team in a group intuition as well, with their collective intuition. The last thing you just reminded me from this question, one thing I wanted to make a point of also, the three places where we stop ourselves from living from our intuitive center. The first one is we don't know how to listen to our intuitive language. So maybe no one ever showed us. It was never encouraged growing up. It's just off our radar. We don't know it's on the menu, right? So I think part of it is, how do I start locating how my intuition language speaks to me? So that's often the first place we can get stuck. The second place we get stuck in the journey is, yeah, I have a sense of my intuition, but I don't trust it. I don't trust myself yet. And I let myself get swayed too much by other powerful voices in the room, whether that's people in the boardroom or my mother or whomever, my spouse, my children, whoever. Right? So we might get too swayed by other powerful voices and abandon our inner intelligence. That can happen pretty often. The other way, yeah. So that's trusting ourselves, is how do we, and also we might pay too much attention to the data on the spreadsheet and wanting to have like
And we're being given another opportunity to take a breath and pause and wait for the screen to come back so we can hear from Rick. Just really use this opportunity to feel, befriend gravity, feel your feet on the ground, feel your butt in the seat. Notice any tension in your body and invite a release. Take a nice breath. Longer exhale.
Okay. We back?
Back, yes.
Okay.
So, Rick, let me check in with you. We're at about minute 32. We have a few more questions, and one of the questions is a practical ask. So would you like to take more questions, or would you like to continue presenting?
Let me just finish this one piece, and then let's go to the question. And then I'm going to go to an exercise, and I want everyone to grab a coin. And it doesn't matter what kind of coin, but grab some kind of coin near you, and we're going to do a fun exercise. So I was just saying the three places we get stuck in our intuition from living from our intuitive intelligence are we don't know how to listen to it in the first place. We don't trust it. The third one is we don't take action. So I might know exactly what needs to happen, and I do trust myself, but I'm afraid to have the conversation. I'm afraid to bring something uncomfortable that I know I need to bring to somebody, right? And so I don't take that action step, or even if it's me stepping out in a new way as a leader, and I'm terrified, even though I know I need to do that next. Yeah. That's the third place we get stuck.
I just want to share this interesting comment in the chat. Kim says, weird, but every question I have, Rick starts answering. I wonder if being around intuitives ends up my intuition.
That's great.
So the operational question is, Juan is asking, can you give some exercises to develop intuition?
That's actually, you read my mind. So we're just going to do that now. So here's what I'd like to do. Let's do a little experiment. This is a very quick and easy one that you can do anywhere. So I want you to grab that coin, and we're going to do a decision-making experiment here with using our intuition. So everyone's got their coin, and I want you to think about a decision that you have to make that might be up for you right now. It could be a big one. It could be a small one, but think about something that's relevant for you. It could be in the business space. It could be personal. It doesn't matter. And what I want you to do is think about choice A or B. So pick something that has two possibilities at least. And I want you to assign one of those to heads on your coin and one of those to tails. So I'll make a simple example just to make it easier for everyone. So let's say I have to make a choice between two jobs. And I can either go into a job being hired as a consultant, or I can take this full-time job as an engineer, let's say. And there's two different opportunities. And so heads would be the consultant, tails would be the engineer. So I want you to think of your version of that right now. And so assign one of your choices to heads and the other choice to tails. What we're going to do is we're going to flip the coin, and we're going to see which one wins. Is it heads or is it tails? Is it choice A that you're thinking of, or choice B? And so what you're going to do is you're going to flip this to a best of nine. So the first side that gets to five first wins. So if heads, if it's like 5-4 heads, then choice A is going to be your choice. Does that make sense? Okay. So I want you to get your coin ready, and you're just going to flip it and then put it over and then see, oh, like, so I got tails. So I'm going to be an engineer. So I want you to do that best of five. I mean, I'm first one to five. And so begin, and then we'll talk, and then we'll debrief this. Here we go. Heads. Heads again. Tails. So 2-2. Tails. Tails. 4-2. 4-3. 5-3. So I'm going to be an engineer. I'll give you another few seconds here. I can see Milena's getting into it. That's great. Raymond too. Okay. Got a yes. Okay, good, Kim. So here's the whole thing right now. I'm about to flip the script on you. You ready? I actually don't care which side got to five first. What I care about is what was your body or your system telling you as it was moving toward one direction or the other. Were you actually rooting on a deeper level for being an engineer or being the consultant in your version of that? Did you notice certain signals in your body that were tightening up or contracting during one of those choices? Did you notice a little more flow or a little more openness or a little more excitement about one of those choices? So I'd love to take a couple shares right now. This is what I find so fascinating is you're starting to tap into your system. So what were you noticing as you did this experiment? Who'd like to share?
We can share in the chat. Yeah, there you go.
Stomach seemed nervous. Yeah, so probably for one of those choices. So that's a great indicator. A lot of times my no is located more in my gut and my yes is more in my heart. But it's going to be different for everyone. That's what makes this so fascinating. The choice I wanted to make excited me. Uh-huh, from Lisa. Thank you, Lisa. Yes, you can actually feel it. It's palpable, right? My system wants to go for a walk right now. Yes. Yes. Okay, good. So this is what's amazing is we can do this all the time. And Carolyn was really happy about the result. Good. And so that's really the whole point. And this is what they've done in studies. Why the coin thing is really helpful. It actually distracts your conscious mind. So your subconscious can connect the dots in the background faster. So once again, it doesn't matter how many you scored, but it does occupy your mind so that you can actually, your intuition can really do the job underneath that. And so that's a great way to play with that, to practice your intuition. In my book, I have a few other exercises like that. One is called red light, green light, where when you sit in a quiet space and you ask a question like, okay, should I fire this person or not? And that's a tough decision. A lot of that's probably when people get interviewed, managers get interviewed, that's usually the thing that's most difficult for them is when they have to fire an employee. So it's a big deal. It can be very impactful for everyone. And so that's a big decision. So sitting with that, obviously you've collected your data, but you still have to sit and get congruent with yourself and get aligned with the choice. And so what happens when you sit down and you actually feel? So red light, green light is, okay, am I getting a green light? If I fire him, what does that feel like? And actually running that through a simulation, imagining that scene happening. If I don't fire him and keep him on the team, what comes up for me in that situation? So I can literally do a virtual reality simulation and just see, how does my body respond? Do I get open or do I want to move toward that direction? Do I feel a big no? And then I get curious about that. So that's my red light, green light. Like, am I getting a green light? Am I getting a red light? And that can be a very helpful way to play with our intuitive decision-making. One of the business leaders that I interviewed in my book made a commitment with himself that he was going to follow his intuition 100% of the time for 6 months, no matter what that led him toward. And he said it was terrifying and it was amazing. And what it did for his company was incredible. But of course, it took him in routes that he didn't expect that wasn't linear. But he developed a whole new trust and relationship with himself because he was willing to commit in that kind of way. Tom, yes. You want to ask a question directly? Go for it. Although I think we can't hear you yet.
Jeremy should be able to unmute him. You're unmuted, Tom.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Yes, interestingly, I do this regularly with the coin, the exercise. Mm. But what happens is that sometimes I feel a very relieved feeling in my body. Let's say a relaxing feeling by one of the options. But then I've actually noticed that that's often the less scared option. Mm-hmm. So often it's the option that I know already. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think you said that before, right? It's mm-hmm. pretty hard to distinguish fear from actually your intuition.
Yes.
I have this, I start to get to learn my body now, and my body is feeling nice and relaxed, mm-hmm. but actually the option that I know. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it's very interesting now to distinguish, maybe the unknown path for me, the new thing that could really help me grow to do a different thing than I regularly do. Mm-hmm. And to actually feel, where is that? Mm-hmm. instead of, and that could be like a really contracting feeling maybe, or a scary feeling, but that's, yeah, I think that's a challenge. That's a big challenge for me.
Tom, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that distinction. And it's a really good point. And yet look, Tom, like you're already onto yourself. Like, you know, sometimes that that relaxation is the easier path. And so it's like, ah, oh, cool, I don't have to do the other thing, right? So you're already onto yourself. Mm-hmm. So you're like, you can't fool your intuition, right? Like there's already a way that you're already tracking that, which is very cool. Let me add this one other distinction as well. So one of the things we were doing in our research is we were looking at how do you make that distinction once again between fear, or another way to say that is the voice of the inner critic. How do I detect the difference between the voice of my inner critic and the voice of my intuition? Because just because I get quiet and I hear a voice, that doesn't always mean that's the voice I want to follow. That could be my inner critic speaking like, oh, comparing myself to everybody else, or doubting me, or telling me why I shouldn't take the risk. Right? And so we all have that narrative. We all have an inner critic. It's that familiar voice that's always telling us that we don't measure up. We're not going to succeed, those kind of things, or comparing ourselves to other people. So one of the things in chapter 5 in my book, we actually make a distinction between how do you start to unpack the inner critic versus the voice of your intuition. And I'll give you a quick two steps you can take, or two identifiers that you can look at. One is when fear is loud or it's present, there's a lot of story. There's a lot of narrative. There's a lot of chatter, right? So let's say I have to fire someone, or at least I'm interviewing them and maybe I don't like them. And I have all my inner critic like, oh, I don't like this person. They reminded me of my brother, da, 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 da. And so right away, I'm not coming from intuition. There's so much story and narrative. A lot of times when we get an intuitive signal, it's very clear. It's sometimes very quiet and it doesn't have any drama attached to it. That's a really important distinction. There's really no drama attached to intuition. It's not a personal, emotionally charged experience that way. Now, we might feel a lot still, but it's not dramatic in terms of all this story and narrative about the situation. It's just like, oh, I'm supposed to leave my job. Now, I might have a lot of feelings about that later when I actually have to make the move. But in the moment, it's like, oh, yeah, this relationship is over now. I can feel the truth of that, even though it might devastate me later. But in that moment of intuition, you just kind of know something. It's that cognizance, right? So one step is to distinguish the two. Intuition doesn't have drama and a lot of narrative. And it also it's not very emotionally charged. So if I'm interviewing someone and I have all this emotional charge about the person, it's probably not my intuition speaking, right? It's probably a projection that I have or a past relationship they remind me of and those kind of things. I'm already judging them, my bias. That's another good question. How do you separate implicit bias from intuition, right? I might have all this prejudice and bias about the person that I'm not totally conscious of, but I might call that my intuition. Like, oh, we shouldn't hire them. How do I know? So that's why it's also good to check in with your intuition with other people that you trust, other nervous systems that are with you that you trust. And I think that's also helpful as you're learning how to relate to your own system, is to also pair that with others that you respect and say, hey, here's the read that I'm getting. What are you feeling about that situation? And that can be very helpful. Does that help, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks very much. Yeah.
Cool. Excellent.
Right.
And Rick, we have a few other questions. Since you mentioned bias, I was playing around today with the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, where your awareness of something increases. So if you buy a new Toyota, every car you see happens to be a Toyota. Mm-hmm. And I was curious when you described the three bodily, sight, and audible types of intuition, how that plays in, because that's certainly a bias. Could that be a visual that all of a sudden you start seeing, what you mentioned, seeing a word? Is that intuition or a bias or something else? Or
could you give me an example of how that might show up?
Yeah, so what I posted this phenomenon about was, I was in a workshop with Dr. David Drake on integrative development, and he brought up the whole idea of hope, and particularly in 2020, how has that impacted your hope? And all of a sudden, I'm seeing all these emails with these classes and quotes and things on hope, whereas I didn't notice that before. So if I were, um, if if I were wanting to make a decision mm-hmm. that is related to that particular topic, how would I know that mm-hmm. it's my intuition versus just paying attention to things because it's, does that make
sense? It's a great question. And I'm going to actually throw a different wrinkle in to excite people on the call here, is that you can actually play with your intuition this way by saying, hey, show me a sign. Like, I actually have some friends that are very intuitive that will literally say, okay, if I'm supposed to do this, show me someone that has an orange hat sometime today. I want to see an orange hat. And they'll do something like that. And then I've heard the story where they're like, yep, they saw the orange hat. And what's also amazing is you can do this in your dream states. So you, before you go to sleep, you might even say, you know, if I have this big choice I have to make in the morning, please show me through my dreams what I need, what's in my highest good. Give me the sign somehow and make it very clear for me so that when I wake up, I really know what's in my highest good. And that's how you can actually use life and use your dream states as a real relationship where you're not just in this bubble that we think we are disconnected from life. Most of us have the experience that we're somehow disconnected from life. We're the only species on the whole planet that does this to itself, by the way, right? But the fact is we're actually completely connected to the web of life. So why couldn't we ask questions and get a response? It's part of the system. And so these are a couple creative ways to do that. Now, what I said earlier is also true, that sometimes I might overread what I want onto a situation. I might put too much meaning onto something because it's one of my egoic desires. So I think that's also very important here is when I'm really trying to come from intuition to the best of my ability, I have to get my personal agenda out of the way. I have to get my ego out of the way, which means I have to.
And we welcome the opportunity the internet is giving us for pausing and reflecting, and really appreciate the engagement we've had in this presentation so far. So if you have any additional questions, please post them in the Q&A, and Rick is back.
We're back. Okay. Yes. So I think engaging with life, we have an opportunity. Getting outside of our ego and our agendas, that's going to really help. Come from that deeper intelligence.
Great. Thank you, Rick. Mm-hmm. So there's a question. Kim is asking, how do I tell the difference if it is good, truthful intuition or bad spirits affecting my intuitive ideas?
Good question. Here's an interesting response that just came to me is, the more that you occupy yourself, others can't occupy you. The more that you're actually embodied and present to your whole being, your breath, actually feeling all of your sensations from your feet, through your legs, through your torso, your head, your arms, when you can be fully embodied and breathing and feeling when you can occupy yourself, you don't have to worry about other entities or other things out there because they can't extract from you. They can't take, because you're inhabiting yourself. And so I think that's what I would say is, the more that I can really just slow down, stay connected to myself, that's going to help me trust what my ecosystem is sharing with me. And then I don't have to give my power away to some other forces or other things out there. Of course, we're going to be impacted by other people and other things. Like, let's say there's a political election in a couple of weeks, let's just say, and we're all impacted by that. So we're going to feel those things. But it's still my job to regulate myself. I'm still responsible for my own experience. And so what do I need to do to ground and then ask the question from that place?
Great. And that actually leads into Sarah's question. So if you're looking in yourself, then how do you filter ego from your intuition?
Yeah, it's one of the five. So in the book, I also talk about the five things that get in the way of our intuition, and ego is one of them. And it's the hardest one. And here's one way, and I'll talk about it more from a business frame, because I know this track is mostly about leadership and business as well. So imagine you're going into a negotiation. And in most negotiations, everyone's thinking about what's in my best interest, me, 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 which is very ego-based. And that's kind of what a lot of business today is made of, is I'm mashing my agenda against your agenda, and let's see who can get the best deal. And that's classically how a lot of business has gone down. What we're finding now with newer leaders and organizations today is they're really realizing we're part of a whole ecosystem and what's best for the ecosystem. So even asking that question, what wants to happen in this negotiation right now for all sides? What's the win-win-win that's here? The win for me, the win for you, and the win for all of our customers. Let's ask that question. So it's not coming from just my own self-interest of my organization, but I'm actually listening for the we space, not just the me space. And you can feel when something is off. Either you're giving too much or you're taking too much. You can feel when that's happening in the room. And so the trick is, how do I speak the moment? How do I name that? How do I be courageous enough to talk that through? That's an amazing way to negotiate on a much higher level, because at the end of the day, if you're screwing somebody over, that's going to come back to get you at some point. It's going to hurt trust. It's going to have blowback in different ways. And also, if you're giving away too much, the same thing's going to happen. You're screwing yourself over and you have to learn better boundaries still. And so how do you have an equitable exchange? You're always listening for that flow, and you have to be willing to say, maybe the timing is off. Maybe this is the right negotiation, but it's at the wrong time. And let's revisit this next quarter. And that's what maybe intuition is saying. It's like, it's premature. So how do we listen to what's happening for me, what's happening in the relational space? And then the third dimension is what's happening in the whole environment. And that's where timing and all these other factors might play in that have nothing to do with me and you. And so if we can start to tune into those levels of intuition, I call it the three dimensions of intuition, between I and thou, and I and the whole environment. And all three are very important.
Playing in the field. Nice.
Playing in the field.
Yeah, great.
Play ball.
So as I prepare to make a few announcements, if you would express your gratitude to Rick in the chat and share how you've changed and what you've learned from his presentation. And with that, know that the next presentation in the Leadership and Business Channel is at 10 p.m. with Laura and Sarah on inner resonant exploration. Before that, there's a keynote by A.H. Almas, The Spiritually Alive Body. And know that there's opportunities to continue the conversation. That's one of the great things, and the thing that's so meaningful for me about this embodiment conference is the community that we're cultivating. So there's a private Facebook group that Jeremy will post that you can join the Leadership and Business Channel, as well as several other channels. There's also opportunities for coffee break. There's a link there, as well as on the Embodiment Conference, the upper right-hand corner, you can join the coffee break where we can continue the conversation. And you can watch these presentations for 48 hours for free. And we also offer you the opportunity to invest in a lifetime access to the recording library so you can listen again. Again, we know that embodiment, different from traditional learning, requires practice, continuous practice, and continuous learning on your own time. There's a vast amount of very vital knowledge that has been shared, as well as practices in the different channels. And if you invest in upgrade, there are some special options there. You have learning lists, you have opportunity for audio only, so you can take it in the car, if you walk, if you run and exercise. There will be a structure to how you can continue the learning. So continue to consider about upgrading, and that would be a special appreciation to all of us who have worked behind the scenes to make this possible, to make this learning available for everyone, initially for free, and then those who continue to learn with the upgrade package. And again, just to remind you of ways to get more information from Rick, Rick, would you speak your website as Jeremy puts it into the chat?
Yeah, you can find out more about what we do with organizations if you go to invisible-edgellc.com. My book is also Decisive Intuition. It looks just like that. And then lastly, if you're interested in a video course of how to tap into your intuition, there's a 6-step process. And so if you go to the gift store, it's called superpoweryourdecisions.com. But if you go to the gift store, I think they're giving you $100 off the course through the gift store at Embodied Conference. So go take advantage of that if that interests you.
Great. Thank you for your generosity and for your wonderful information. And as we wrap up here, Rick, we are putting together a book that will have the top tip of embodiment practice from each of our presenters. So what would you like to add as advice for your top tip for embodiment practice?
Here's the 3 steps. Stop, drop, and ask. So stop what you're doing and slow down. Drop into your experience and be willing to take a breath and feel into it. And from there, ask a question. Ask the question that's on your mind or that's on your heart, and then see what happens. That's where the listening kicks in. So stop, drop, and ask.